Across the United States for the past 100 years, October has been celebrated as National Fire Prevention Month. In 2022, October is also the 16th celebration of World Bullying Prevention Month. We'll talk with two fire rescue chiefs who are focused on both issues on this episode of the Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. From Flourish DX, this is the Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. Safety at work is more than freedom from physical injury. To be safe, you have to feel safe. Join us each week as we discuss psychologically healthy and safe work in the USA. Well, welcome to this week's Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. I'm your host, Dr. I. David Daniels, and I'm going to thank you for tuning in. Each week, we seek to increase the importance of psychological health and safety by learning from the lived experiences, research, and expertise of our guests, as well as advocating strategies to reduce harm and minimize vulnerability to psychosocial hazards in the American workplace. This episode is an intensely special and personal kind of episode because I have the opportunity to introduce to some and present to others some old friends who actually been working on the issue of psychological safety in the fire rescue service, really focused mostly on bullying. But both of these fire chiefs have been at the forefront of that conversation for a number of years, and they continue to have discussions about the importance of making sure that people who are in situations that you really, you absolutely can't eliminate psychosocial hazards from fire rescue service. You just can't. It's the job. It's the job. It's responding to people's worst days, but trying to find ways so when it's the worst day for someone else, it is not necessarily the worst day for the person that you're sending. So again, it's my honor and pleasure to present two gentlemen, one from the great state of Texas, Chief Dr. Scott Kerwood, and from up in the Northeast, up in New Hampshire, Fire Chief Dave Emanuel. And because we've got, you know, both of you on at the same time, we're going to be kind of bouncing back and forth. And the way I start these episodes is with a fairly direct but simple question, and it'll go to Chief Kerwood first. Who is Scott Kerwood?
Well, first of all, thanks, David, for allowing me to be on the program. And as we talk through this, people, I think, will see why this has become this subject has become important to me and kind of where we got started with it. I'm fire chief in Hutto, Texas, a small suburb, rapidly growing on the northeast side of Austin, Hutto Fire Rescue. We're a special taxing district, so we not only provide services to the city of Hutto, but a total of 63 square miles. I have a PhD in public policy and with specializations in leadership and homeland security. I am also a board member of the IAFC Safety, Health, and Survival section and was just appointed as the international director on the IAFC board of directors. Have been a student of the fire service since 1978. And probably the best way to frame it all when it comes to this is I'm one of the many with our group. I'm one of those safety zealots that's out there.
Right. Absolutely.
So in a nutshell.
Absolutely. Okay. So who is David Emanuel?
Thank you, Dave. I am the fire chief in Durham, New Hampshire, on the campus of the University of New Hampshire. And I've been here since I was a student. My dad told me that I'll outgrow it sometime, but I haven't yet. I've worked my way from a volunteer in my home community through a call company member. I've been a firefighter, a captain, a union president, and health, safety, training, and education have been one of the passions that really makes me go. I hold a bachelor's in business administration, civil engineering, and a master's in public administration, as well as a graduate of the National Fire Academy. And I try to pay forward by serving. I've served for the CPSC on the center of the CPC for professional credentialing. And I currently am working with the Safety, Health, and Survival section of the IFC, following Dr. Kerwood on everything I can do at a local level. I pay dues at the mutual aid district level to make sure our mutual aid district is doing well, and the State New Hampshire Chiefs Association to try to keep the state of New Hampshire aligned with my peers that I'm speaking with today that are setting the bar for safety in the fire service.
Absolutely. So for those folks who may not catch some of the acronyms, so the IFC is the International Association of Fire Chiefs. It's a big group for, you know, for those who aren't familiar with the fire service, of folks actually literally internationally, a bunch of countries around the world where fire chiefs kind of get together and talk about all kinds of stuff. And one of the topics that, you know, again, as a actually I'm a life member of the IFC myself. That's pretty cool to, you know, to be a member and just have to not do a whole lot, but just get to be a member and put it on the resume. So that's pretty cool as well. But I want to dive right into the conversation. And when I talk about, when you hear the concept of psychological health and safety, when you hear that, what types of thoughts does that conjure up for you? And we'll start with Dr. Kerwood. You know, when you hear that concept, what does that mean to you?
Thanks, Chief. You know, actually, I never thought of it in those terms for a long time. It was the well-being physically and mentally of the firefighter that we deal with, because that's what we look at safety, health, and survival. You know, our mission is to save a firefighter's life, one firefighter at a time. But then when I started looking at it, it's we look out for the mental health and well-being of our firefighters. We want to make sure that they're free from hassling because of who they are rather than what they can do. That's what it's about. You know, you look at, can you do the job? Not what color are you, not what gender are you, or anything like that. It's, can you do the job of a firefighter? We want to make sure that we're free from the old time, we'll call it old time initiations, the rite of passage that we see all the time in the fire service. But it's not just the fire service. Mm-hmm. We can look, and I'm going all the way back to people in Boy Scouts and initiations that they would do in Boy Scout troops. And we've heard of stuff going on there lately. But, you know, making sure that we're free from those and we're looking out for our individual to make sure that when we can take care of them, that translates to them taking care of the public.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Chief Manuel, what are your thoughts on the concept of psychological health and safety?
Well, today I take it right to the work being done by the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And I tie it in when I talk about psychological health and safety with our crews. We talk about the 16 life safety initiatives that the Fallen Firefighter Foundation put together, like especially cultural change, accountability, training and education, mental and physical fitness, and psychological support. And, you know, the psychological support really, I know it's an emerging field and I know you're dialed in on it, but when I used to think about it, I would think about taking care of the people in the firehouse. Mm. Now I try to broaden that net or horizon to look at not only who is here at the firehouse, but who's taking care of them at home and who we have to take care of to try to make sure that our members have the tools, knowledge, tools, skills, and ability to be able to take care of themselves and their families and vice versa.
Mm. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, there. You know, there's a lot of conversation in the fire rescue service. And again, I certainly heard it and experienced a lot about the importance of the fire station really being like home, you know, it being a kind of this big family. But like all families, you know, all families have challenges. And there are also things that go on sometimes inside the family that folks may not know a lot about. If you were to stop the average person on the street and ask them what the number one cause of firefighters, you know, dying, they probably went to a fire and got burned up in a fire. And as we all know, that hasn't been the case for decades. You know, for a while there's a lot of focus on cardiac survival and a lot of firefighters having heart attacks and how people drive. But if you look at the, you know, the data suggests right now that if you look across both the active and particularly retired fire service, one of the leading causes of death now is suicide. Unfortunately, firefighters, you know, not feeling that they want to continue to live based often on the things they've been exposed to and then the lack of care and counseling and that type of thing. So if you were to give a to kind of an assessment of the fire rescue service as a whole, what types of, you know, other than bullying, what types of other psychosocial hazards do you think are out there that, you know, or can you share with people that firefighters are actually exposed to? And again, we'll start with Chief Kerwood again.
So we, those of us that have been in the business for a while, either by the color of our hair or lack of hair, we've seen all those different types of incidents out there. And you know what? We make jokes about them kind of as a barrier that we put up. We're getting individuals now that they're different. And we talk about the different generations and everything like that. But it's really the bad calls that people are being exposed to, even us in our generation, they're being exposed to, that can have that impact on them in their career, which then translates into their personal life. We were all taught in our generation to suck it up and just do the job. Yeah, that doesn't work with people today. We're also seeing the balance of life events and the work events, work-life balance. I think that's the term being used quite a bit now. You can't leave these things at the door. Again, we were always taught leave home at the door, and you leave the fire station at the fire station. I don't know a single person that does that in reality. I don't do it. And I've had some significant events that we're dealing with in home right now, that as much as you try to separate, you can't separate. But all of those psychological hazards has an impact of varying degrees on how you do your job and how you interact with the other people on your station.
Absolutely. Chief Emanuel, anything to add?
I just would add, I think this is an emerging or evolving field that we're just starting to put resources towards. And much like leadership and conflict management, I try to ask as many questions as I can to try to understand where our members are coming from and where the landmines are, so we can best equip the organization and our members with all the tools we can. Our municipality invests in the AP program. We have counseling services available. We're lucky because our Firefighters Association of the Union has a number of people that have embraced the peer support network. They've gone to the IFF training. We're trying to follow all the best management practices that the IFF or the IAFC or the Firefighters Union or the Chiefs Association are putting out. So we're constantly reading, constantly learning, and trying to do the best we can for our people.
Sure.
Well, okay. Just because the bad thing hasn't happened here with one of our members, the worst thing, none of us are safe from this. And the questions you're asking today are on track with what we should all be thinking about as industry leaders.
Yeah, one of the topics that I came across in my research is there are lots and lots of different definitions out there about what psychological safety is. You know, there's Dr. Amy Edmondson is credited with, you know, that concept and developing the concept to suggest we should be able to bring our whole self to work and all of that. And another gentleman by the name of William Kahn, he did some research on engagement and suggested that you can't engage people if they don't bring their whole self. And both of those plus others, you know, have led me to the conclusion that a psychosocial hazard is a psychosocial factor that is perceived or experienced by the person as a threat. It's a very individual thing. And a lot of these kind of cookie cutter approaches, they're not bad, but they don't work for everybody. Because you've got these, you know, as you've both talked about, people come from all these different backgrounds and they get exposed to different things in terms of the calls that they go to. I mean, in being in and around the fire service for, you know, a few decades myself, I can't think of a single solitary incident that was identical to another. They're similar, but they're never identical. So this idea that, oh yeah, we can come up with a thing and we'll just apply this next time, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work at a fire, and it doesn't work on emotional stuff either, because it's learning from the things that you've seen and then taking, how is this affecting this person at this point? What's going on with them right now? And then determining how we're actually going to deal with it. So again, both of you have mentioned how there's this ongoing assessment of mental health and how firefighters are feeling and all that type of thing. And Chief Emanuel, you talked a little bit about some of the things that you're doing. But if, again, if you, let's go back to the broader fire service, at least your experience of it. What's your assessment about across the system, how people are dealing with mental and emotional health in the fire rescue service? And Chief Emanuel, yeah, we'll start with you on this one.
I think we have a long way to go. You know, we are building the systems to try to make things work. But I think Chief Kerwood mentioned it. Not everybody buys into new school stuff. You know, our culture has, not ours right here, but I mean, we've been called snowflakes. We've been called soft. We've been, you know, you're not doing the same stuff that I did when I started. Well, it's not the same world it was when any of us started. And it's our job to evolve and try to support our people. I think we're doing okay, but we definitely have room for improvement. Absolutely.
Sure. Chief Kerwood, your thoughts?
You know, as a fire chief, you have those two different groups you're dealing with. You're dealing with your internal folks, and you're dealing with people out in the public. You have to take care of your folks inside for them to be able to effectively take care of people outside. And as Chief Emanuel said, you know, we're only at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the mental and emotional health, but then also how that affects their physical health, which translates into service delivery. We've started to put money as fire departments into making sure we can take care of our people. Wise man once told me that you put your money in what's important to you and your organization. And you know, we're starting to see those changes across the fire service. As Chief Emanuel said, we've gotten past, or hopefully we're getting past this, oh, you're soft if you're dealing with this stuff. Well, no, it's not soft. You got to take care of your people so that you can take care of your public.
Mm. Well, there's a, and you get a little bit bolder about some of this stuff, you know, as you have more birthdays, but when people suggest that I'm soft, they go, yeah, actually I am. You know, actually I am. I do have a soft spot in my heart for other human beings who are struggling. It takes a person with a soft spot to put their entire life on the line for somebody they've never even met before. So yeah, that might be a little bit soft. And I've also observed, you know, some of the folks who will suggest that, you know, this is the soft skill. I agree with that as well. This is a soft skill because the hard skills we're actually getting better at, you know? So there are, you know, again, if you look at the data, you know, the occurrence of fires in the United States is about half of what it was when I started back in the 80s. And I'm sure both of you have similar kinds of experiences. So because as a society, we've gotten better with fire prevention. Again, October is Fire Prevention Month. There's going to be lots of conversation about, you know, about fire extinguishers and exit plans and, you know, all these kinds of things. So as a society, we've gotten better at the hard stuff. The challenge is, we've not necessarily gotten better at the soft stuff. And we have an entire generation of people who are, you know, who are just, they're just wired differently. And thank God they are, particularly in the aftermath of this pandemic. People are just focusing a little bit more on their own, you know, their own health and, you know, whether or not things are important. And, you know, so, and I find it, as traditional as the fire service is, and, you know, and Scotty, you remember back in the day when when the folks, even in the International Association of Fire Chiefs, called us all again, and you still wear the moniker, I think I want to wear it too, as your safety zealots, that's not really all that important and all that type of thing. And now folks are finally starting to catch on to what we were talking about 10 or 15 years ago. We've got to be concerned about these people. So I I'd like you to talk a little bit about, you know, this effort around trying to prevent bullying and all that type of thing. Give us a little bit of history lesson. How did we get there? Where did that come from?
Well, you know, David, I try to get out here and I proselytize how we at the Safety, Health, and Survival section got here, because that's a direct connection between you and I. You and I have had many, many conversations on different subjects over the years, from race to safety to bullying and things like that. And we were actually at an FRI, and I don't remember how far back it was, but we were talking about violence in the fire service because there was stuff going on. You remember, we were probably talking even about the Jackson, Mississippi shooting back in April 25th of 96, Chief Joe Donovan down there, where a firefighter came in, killed two battalion chiefs and two captains. And so as we were talking, we were trying to say, you know, really, we can't deal with the symptoms. We have to deal with the cause. And so we started talking about, what's the root cause? What do we really look at as the root cause of this violence in the fire service? And we just kind of said, well, it probably centers around harassment. And then harassment led us to bullying. And then the question was, well, does this have a place to fit in safety, health, and survival? Your comment was, oh, absolutely it does. And I'd like to take that project on and work with us. And so that's how we got here today. And then you have passed that torch on to Chief Emmanuel, who is running just great with moving this project forward in the safety, health, and survival section. So it's amazing just sitting down and people talking, writing out thoughts, what it can lead to.
Sure, sure. Chief Emmanuel, share a little bit more about, you know, when you got involved and tell us a little bit about where the efforts around bullying and harassment are today.
Well, I am still grateful that you and the task force that the IAFC set up to work on bullying, harassment, violence prevention, because we know that it's the circle of incivility. It starts with incivility or rudeness and moves to bullying, harassment, and ends in violence. And we know that if we can disrupt the chain anywhere along the way, we all come out better. You brought me into the group in 2016-ish, and we set up some online resources at the International Association of Fire Chiefs website called the Bullying Workplace Violence Prevention Toolkit. So if you Google IAFC Workplace Violence Bullying Prevention Toolkit, you'll get a list of different articles, policies, and resources that can validate what is going on maybe in your workplace, your organization. The first time we put together, in 2018, we put together a call to say, would anybody like to speak about this? And Dave, you were in the room when almost 100 fire service leaders flooded the room to say, we want to talk about bullying in the fire service. We took it from there to a pre-conference event where Dr. Namy from the Workplace Bullying Institute came out and substantiated our concerns, not just in the fire service, but in the workplace across the world. And he helped us spin up a set of fire service experts that could take it from a global perspective to a fire service perspective. And over the past 2 years, we've been polishing a curriculum for the fire and emergency services that we delivered last year as a pilot, received feedback on and polished it again, and just delivered it last week at Fire Rescue International. And the feedback we're getting is, we know the feedback from our peers is, we know that to have difficult conversations and ask difficult questions, you need to do it in person. However, we also need to provide more awareness level training online. And I know that not everybody likes online training, but over the past several years, it has evolved and it's become a new baseline for us. So we're reaching out, trying to build new partnerships and collaborative efforts to figure out how to put together a sustainable program for the fire emergency services to align ourselves with the best workplace practices, whether it's with the Safety Council or groups like we are with today.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I you know, as I think about these opportunities we've had to work together around bullying and harassment, violence prevention, and you know, some of the other, you know, the focus on cancer and the focus on just overall, you know, personal health, the fire service in many ways. And it's this interesting contradiction because you've got a very, very, very traditional group that is really not big into change. I heard once that law enforcement people change really slow and firefighters don't change at all. But that's some of the conversations around change. But this has been, from a safety perspective, it's actually been, it's been a unique opportunity that a very traditional industry has taken to a very important topic and been able to help other industries, particularly in the public sector. Because local governments, and both of you have heard me say this before, but you know, it's not just the fire department. It's the other services that get provided to the public. Often folks just, you know, sometimes it seems like they just, people just don't really care about them. You know, many local governments and particularly fire rescue departments are not necessarily subject to OSHA. They're not necessarily subject to a lot of regulation, and they don't like necessarily being regulated. But there are these challenges that are out there that everybody faces, public or private, and you have to be able to address it. So, you know, have you, and again, both of you talked about, you know, these, the activities that you're involved in, but could you talk a little bit about how your efforts in the fire service translate to other public sector types of activities? Chief Kerr, what about you? How does it, is there a connection between what the fire service is doing and the rest of, you know, local, state, and federal government?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a microcosm of other industries. The challenge, while our psychological challenge may be that bad call out there, we're still in the people business. Public Works is in the people business. Trash collectors are in the people business. We just have different tools that we work with. And if I'm a city manager or I'm a mayor or I'm a councilman, I have to recognize the most important thing within my entire organization is not that multi-million dollar piece of equipment that I'm buying, but it's the person that's operating that multi-million dollar piece of equipment. Otherwise, it's just a brick sitting on the side of the road if I don't take care of the people. And so then for everyone from fire service to law enforcement to local and regional and state governments, they have to identify those organizations, such as what we've done with the fire chiefs and IFC, where we have the safety, health, and survival section where we can feed information. I'm sure in Public Works, there's a safety, health, and survival section for Public Works folks. I'm sure there's the same thing in the law enforcement side. So just because there's an FD attached to it doesn't make it just ours. Those city governments should look at least the model that we've put together and go out there and say, hey, we got to do something like this for the rest of our employees.
Absolutely. Chief Emanuel, do you think that there are ways that the work that that even the task force has done, you think that could be translated to other segments of government?
I do agree. And you know, I'll take it. Chief Kerwood mentioned the Scouts BSA earlier in his notes and remarks. Even the Scouts, the Boy Scouts of America, have online bullying awareness training. It's right there with youth protection training. So when you want to volunteer for the Scouts, you will be exposed to what bullying is. And it, because the factors that enable or permit bullying to be there, you know, it's the conditions on where everyone's gathered. It's the culture of the organization. It could be shift work, isolated stations, paramilitary rank structure. All the different foundational blocks that can enable someone's poor behavior to influence other people, that create the fulcrum for the power imbalance, they are present in many of our government structures and civic organizations. And when you read about bullying tendencies or start studying it, whether it's in a church, the Scouts, the fire department, or other municipal organizations, the enabling factors are often present. And it's up to us to increase the awareness of the members, the parishioners, the scouts, or the employees to say, hey, it's not okay. Let's what just happened? Or Dave, when that person said something, this is what I heard. What did you hear? Can we talk to the person or can we bring it up? Let's talk about it.
And you know, Chief, you just made me cause me to think about something. Both of you are, you know, our fire service leaders and have been for years. What's the role of leadership in this whole conversation? I mean, does a leader have a role in making sure that it's psychologically healthy and safe? Chief Emanuel, we'll start with you.
In the fire service, our mantra is everybody goes home. It's our job to make sure that the people in our organizations have the tools. They can come to work safe. They can go home from work safe. We do the best we can to make that happen. As leaders, it's our job to go beyond the chief's office or the administration wing of the fire department to find out what's actually happening at the kitchen table. Because often, hey, we don't have a problem, chief. Dave, we don't have a problem in our fire department. City manager, we're good. It's our job to make sure we're in touch with our organization and that we're not providing lip service that everything's okay, that we are providing training, education, and clear objectives that bullying is not okay, and that we need to have an inclusive organization where we know the country is struggling with recruitment and retention. We need to figure out how to make our organization a destination where people want to come and work. I'm not going to change the potential hires out there. We can only change ourselves to make us a destination. And it doesn't matter whether we're police, fire, public works. Am I answering your question, Dave?
You are, in fact. Chief Kerwood, any thoughts along that line? What's the role that leaders have in this discussion about psychological health and safety?
An organization, the culture of an organization looks like who the person is at the top of the organization. Sometimes in the fire service, you can have 5 bugles on your collar. Other times you have 5 toilet plungers on your collar. And so it's our job to lead our folks when we start talking about this. We need to send people, and I'm going to put in a plug here, we need to send people to the Respect Your House class that the ISC Bully Task Force has put together. You need to bring it into your local fire department, to your region, to your state. We have metro departments that have reached out to Chief Emanuel saying, we want this program in here. Those are leaders in that metro department or that small department that says, we want it there. Chief Emanuel talked about the kitchen table. We need to set that kitchen table every single day, and we need to pay attention to our members. Drink coffee. Listen. Don't say a word. Don't say a word. Just sit there and listen. But when it's time to talk to your folks, talk to them. Genuinely talk to them. Don't just do lip service. Look them in the eyes. Put your phones away. Put your computer away. And listen to those concerns that are going on. You also should be, every fire department should be conducting a behavioral health assessment as outlined in NFPA 1582. And there's different organizations out there that can do that. Chief Emanuel's at a university. He's got university staff that can help him do that. We contract with a company that sends our behavioral health assessment to our cell phone. As much as I don't like doing stuff on a cell phone because I'm not that generation, all these other folks behind me, they live on their cell phone, so it's natural to them. But as a leader, you've got to get the pulse as to how well are my people doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting, that's something I really wasn't aware of. Could you, Chief Kerwood, talk a little bit about that behavioral health assessment that your organization does? That's a very interesting concept. I'd just like to hear more about it.
Yeah, so we do our behavioral health assessment every time we do our annual 1582 physical. It's part of that. So we all receive a notice on our phone, hey, congratulations, it's that time of year again when we're going to do your physical. The two things or three things you have to do before you come in and we start poking and prodding, you have to take this behavioral health assessment. You have to do some blood work. And quite honestly, I don't remember what the third thing is. I'll know here in a few months once I get there. But you can't progress to the next section of your physical till you complete that behavioral health. So we go through our physical, we go through all that. And of course, to administration, to the fire chief, everything's anonymous. We don't know anything. But the company that we use, they put statistics together that says, okay, and it's not identifying people, but it says you've got X amount of people who are, they're sleep deprived, which is leading to issues. Or, hey, we identified one person who may be suicidal. And at that point, they intervene. They get with the person and say, there's a problem. And then they can direct them to the appropriate mental health expert. All we get is, hey, you have these amount of people that do things. We never know the name, which we don't want to, because we want to make sure that our folks trust the information that's going there. We don't want them to see it as a threat to their job, which it's not. It's just taking care of them.
Mm-hmm. Chief Emmanuel, again, there was a mention earlier that you, you're on the campus of an institution of higher learning. Are there ways, so talk a little bit about some of the ways that being in that environment is helpful to the efforts that you have in place to take care of your folks?
Well, we go in cycles. We often have somebody from the kinesiology department who's doing some sort of study on us, whether it's a study of our health and fitness or impacts and stress related to our bodies when we're wearing our PPE or we're on breathing air. You know, like the last one we did, they had us run through a bunch of different exercises, and they monitored a little bit of everything. The one before that, they built a special box for us to do exercises in, one in a 70 degree room with all your gear and air pack on, and one in a 90 or 110 degree room with your gear and air pack on. I mean, we even got to swallow little thermometers so they could tell our internal temperatures on some of these things. So, you know, we are fortunate on that side. For being on the edge of research. But we still contract with our local hospital on our occupational health, physicals, and behavioral health. And we try to check people before they come into the service, and then every year afterwards to be 1500 compliant on this front.
Right.
And one of the interesting sides that I've experienced, Chief, is just sometimes labor is more concerned about the privileges of an existing employee and their entitlement to a position. And they don't always look at the impacts of stress or health on longevity of a career or your life. And sometimes we compete on whether we're talking about whether somebody gets to retire and have a productive life with their family, or they have a right to stay on the job because they're on the job right now. And that,
right,
in my opinion, translates right into the psychological health and safety as well. We need to support our people.
Yeah, we do. That's you know, both of the, you know, what you've both just said is really thought provoking, because there are, again, a lot of particularly public sector organizations who don't have access to those kinds of resources. And it's not because they're not available. It's because of the mindset often of even the elected and appointed officials say, oh, that's just for the fire department. And it shouldn't be just for the fire department, because, you know, that quote unquote bad call, there were police officers there. There were folks from the other law enforcement agencies. There were EMS providers there. There could have been parks workers. There could have been, these are all workplaces for people. And to the extent, you know, this is an opportunity, I think, you know, again, another opportunity for leadership on the part of the Fire Rescue Service to be the beacon in the public sector to say, look, this is not just for us. This is for everybody. And we have the opportunity to be the, you know, the guinea pig, so to speak. But it's important that somebody be on the leading edge and really try to figure this out, because these are things that fire rescue folks face every day, but everybody is going to face someday. Again, the issue around psychosocial, you know, hazards is you cannot 100% eliminate them. You cannot. There's physical. You can have a building that is absolutely 100% fire safe. There will never be a fire in that building. But as soon as you put people into it, you bring psychosocial hazards into the environment. So again, as we start to conclude this conversation, what do you see? What's next? I mean, you know, you talked a little bit about some of the, you know, the activities that are going on right now. What do you see next in this effort to make, you know, emotional, mental health, psychosocial hazard mitigation, whatever you want to call it, to make that a more important issue in the fire rescue service? Chief Emmanuel, what do you think's coming up next?
I think just the awareness and education to be able to have those open, honest dialogues is of paramount importance. And I just, Daniels, when we had this training session last week on the national platform, all of the officers, or a significant number of the officers of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, came into the classroom to thank the participants and the people who are training to be able to deliver education for their time and investment because of how important it is. And when our leaders in the fire service recognize that, it breaks the ice. I didn't mention the university in town where our fire department is jointly funded. And so much of what we're talking about comes down to financial resources and financial backing. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to work in a community who puts the money on the table to send our personnel out for help, to send our personnel for the annual physicals. It's a significant investment by the local community. But we need to be able to bring it to the decision makers and the policy makers and our elected officials to request the funding to support our members in this initiative. So if we can build the foundation so our leaders know how important it is and what the payback is, or what the costs of having bullying or the costs of having a toxic workplace environment are on the municipality, on the college, in the community, it's worth the money, it's worth the investment. And to be able to give me the understanding and the speaking points to communicate that, as well as being grateful for the people who have paved the way before me, I am grateful to both of you for putting us in a good position to be able to have these conversations.
Sure. Chief Kerwood, you know, look at your crystal ball. What do you think's next around this effort around psychological health and safety and emotional wellness in the fire rescue service?
So, you know, you had asked us to look at these questions before we got with you, and I was trying to say, what do we have to do? What do fire chiefs have to do? And that's who I'm going to center this around, since I wear that rank. We as fire chiefs, we have to recognize bullying. We have to see it. We have to not do things the way that we've done it in the past. We can't any longer just let it go. We have to stop it. We have to stop it in its place. You know, and there's a fine line between bullying and joking around. And sometimes that fine line is hard to see. You know, it's kind of like we've heard from the Supreme Court, the definition of pornography, you'll know it when you see it. Bullying is, you know it when you see it. We have to hold our officers accountable. Fire chiefs don't run the fire department. Battalion chiefs don't run the fire department. Any fire department in this country is ran by company officers. And if you don't think that applies to your department, lose your company officers and see how fast you lose the fire department. Kind of like the analogy of lose the locker room and you've lost the football team. We also have to hold members accountable. Just because they don't have a bugle on their collar doesn't mean that they've got a free pass to do anything. They're accountable for what they do and the actions they have. But man, we have to send our folks, regardless of rank, to a class. Not just the one that I advertised on the Respect Your House, which, man, I'd love everyone to go through that. But there's other stuff out there. Dr. Nimi's class that Dave mentioned at the very beginning. And there's just lots of stuff out there. People have to get education. Chief Daniels, you mentioned hard skills and soft skills. We are very, very, very good at cutting holes in roofs, of pulling hose lines, of squirting water, and pulling people out of holes in the ground. We don't do a good job of this one-on-one people stuff. We have to educate ourselves on how to properly do that. So what I see is there's a lot of education ahead for everybody. There's officers being officers and just trying to stop this stuff in its tracks.
Absolutely. So we've talked a lot about, you know, the prevention of bullying and emotional and mental health and all that type of thing. So as we come to a close, what do the two of you do? What do you do to take care of yourself? You know, you're focused on the general public a lot. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on with managing a fire department and being a part of local government and being a part of your communities. I know both of you are active in all kinds of things. So what do you do to take care of you, Chief Kerwin?
You know, we always forget about ourselves. I know I do. And as I mentioned earlier, some additional stresses that come on in life. We require everyone to go through that behavioral health assessment once a year to see where you're at. I rely on that when I get it back on. No, I didn't recognize that stress is getting to me. Or I'll have an assistant chief. I know when my assistant chief and our administrator come in and they sit down in my office, the first thing I go is, oh no, what did I do? Or what's going on? And it's like, are you okay? Because when we get to this level, you know, we don't really have that person that we can go to and talk to, either in supervisors, city managers, or boards, or even those below us. And so we have to know that we have to rely upon our peers, our other fire chiefs, and get away from the business every once in a while, get that work-life balance. I haven't always been that way. You know, it was always fire service, fire service, fire service. And if you didn't believe me, go look. It was fire service, fire service, fire service. But I had a significant life event, as Dr. Morris Massey would say, that changed my views on that. It's like, yeah, I better take care of myself. I think now I'm in a good position, having moved up to the IFC executive board, that I've gone from the platform of the safety, health, and survival section talking about this to being on the big board, to where it's like, man, that's all you talk about anymore. You always come in these meetings talking about harassment and workplace violence and bullying. And I think I'm in a good position now to help push this message out larger in the fire service. The working relationship over the years that I've developed with the safety and health folks at IFF and on the stuff on 1500 and 1582. And believe me, we're on the same sheet of music when it comes to safety and health. IFF and IFC may have differences on some things, but when it comes to safety and health, we're together on doing that. So, I step back every now and then and go, okay, am I taking care of myself, which is what I have to do. Long answer to your question.
That's okay, Chief Manuel.
Thank you, Chief. I guess I hang my hat on humor, being goofy, trying to get exercise. My wife and I go for a walk every day and spending time outdoors, whether it's on the tractor, in the woods, landscaping, on the trails. And I surround myself with my family. You know, I started late, so I have three kids. They're at elementary, junior, high, and high school. And I try to have breakfast with one of them every day. We put them on the bus when they let us. We walk one of them to school. I spend time with my friends mentors and mentees to try to make sure that I'm grounded all the way around, looking forward and back. And I volunteer with the Scout Pack with my daughter and the Scout Troop with my two sons as an assistant Scoutmaster and as the Cub Master. You know, people say I'm soft for using my vacation with a bunch of little kids, but to be able to influence, 15 or 20 Cub Scouts for a week in the woods on something that is a life-changing event for them because they've never been away from their folks before, or to take a group of Scouts to one of the country's high adventure bases and do stuff that I've never done before, never mind them, it sets me a couple of steps back from the steps, from the process every day. And it lets me ground myself on, youthful impression. We can make a change or influence next year's leaders or our next generation on who's going to be running our country or taking care of our communities. When it gets me out of the firehouse, it helps me put back in perspective that you both shared with me before. You got little kids, be there. I do everything I can to be there, which is sometimes in conflict with the people at the firehouse because they're like, chief has to be at his desk. I have a leash that they know how to get me. And when something happens, I'm there. I try to invest in my family. So I'm just trying to learn from the people before me to say, don't miss it. And I do everything I can to play music with them in church, be present. And I mess it up like everybody else does, but I do everything I can to, I'm not here at the firehouse at 7 a.m. every day for shift change. Sometimes I'm still having breakfast with a 10-year-old.
Right.
For making me whole, I think that helps me not be cloudy with some of the baggage that it's very challenging to let go of in our positions.
Absolutely. So again, as we close this session, this has been, first of all, just good catching up with two friends. Really, it's really heartwarming to see how, again, I love situations where people said, that's never going to work. And it actually does. Absolutely love that. So just for a close, if there are folks who want to catch up with you personally, they want to, find out a little bit more about what's going on in, in your fire department or in the Fire Chiefs Association or with some of the things that you're doing, how can people get a hold of Fire Chief Dave Emanuel?
That's a great question. You can find me on the Durham Fire Department, Durham, New Hampshire Fire Department website, or you can find me on LinkedIn. And those are solid ways that I try to monitor. And if you're in a dire crisis, call the Durham Fire Station. We have an administrative staff that's really good at hurting me and connecting me with people that need to be connected with.
Absolutely. Chief Kerwin, how can folks find you through your various endeavors?
Well, it's like what Chief Emanuel said, you can go to our website, huddofirerescue.org, and there's connections on there. You can email sdkerwood@huddofirerescue.org. The email goes direct to my phone. David mentioned the leash. And so I carry my leash with me everywhere, like probably every other fire chief does. And those are the quickest ways to get hold of me. And I'm happy to share any of the information that we talked about, both on what we've done on the safety and health section, as well as the personal stuff. If anyone wants information on what we're doing as far as our behavioral health assessment, man, I'll be glad to push that out to anybody.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you very much, Chief David Emanuel, Chief Scott Kerwood. It has been such a pleasure to be able to spend some time with both of you. For those of you who are listening in and would like to keep up with what's going on in psychological health and safety here in the United States, at least with this conversation, you can go to our website, psychhealthandsafetyusa.com. You can certainly find us on LinkedIn. There's lots of good information out there. Again, we are a part of a global movement of individuals who are interested in seeing the workplace be a safer place for everyone. So until our next episode, we'd certainly like to thank again our two guests today. Happy Fire Prevention Month. Also, happy Bullying Prevention Month, which is also in the month of October. We'll look forward to our next opportunity to share here on the Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. Thanks very much. You've been listening to the Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. To stay up to date with the best content on workplace mental health in America, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and join the Flourish DX community at www.flourishdx.com.